Progressive presents Adjusting to the Suburbs.
I never thought about space in my cramped apartment, but in this house, all I see is empty space. The sofa and ottoman look like tiny islands in a sea of hardwood floors. I could get two ottomans in the living room, but then I'd need another sofa. I could tell people I'm into minimalism.
Anyway, when you save with Progressive by bundling your home and auto, that's the easy part of adjusting to the suburbs. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company coverage provided in service by affiliates and third-party insurers.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to The Big Thing. It is Monday, the year of our Lord. And joining me always.
Just a day, Chris.
Just a day.
Yeah, it's not the whole year.
It's not the whole year. Janie me? Over on the other side.
Too late to turn around now.
Too late. We're there.
Just keep throwing more coal on this caboose.
Mark Ellis is here, ladies and gentlemen.
Hi, everyone.
Monday. And if you didn't know, look at this. You see the top there? Not that sparkling, gorgeous head of his.
Thank you.
And even there, look at that. Ladies and gentlemen, Captain Morgan, I'm so excited
about
this. I can't tell you how excited I am because of, you know, I'm a Captain Morgan guy. I'm a big Captain Morgan.
You have been for a long time.
I'm a big Captain Morgan fan, but I want to let you guys know something that you might not have known before. We are super excited to be partnering up with Captain Morgan. It is the original spice rum because on July 31st, get ready for the Schmodown Collision presented by Captain Morgan. What a run of matches we have. Star Wars Championship, Dimolanta versus Kelly. The Inner Geekdom number one contender match, Saul versus Moses. The number one singles contender match, Marisol McKee versus Kevin Smith. And in the main event for the Teams Championship of the World, the reigning Movie Trivia Schmodown Teams Champions, Shazam! Face Corruption, former two-time champions. It is going to air on July 31st, and no matter how you choose to celebrate and to watch the Schmodown, Captain Morgan is best enjoyed responsibly. It's the captain's orders. That's Captain Morgan, original spiced rum. It's at Captain Morgan, USA. I'm pumped, man. I'm pumped to be working with Captain Morgan.
Got a lot of surprises in there for the kids.
It's going to
be
good.
July 31st. Yeah, and I know that when you look at that flyer, you may say, "Now wait a minute. There's no way that that young man is of drinking age, but he is."
Me?
Brendan Meyer, who is just to the right of William Bibbiani in the shot. Don't worry, he's 21. We ID'd the kid.
Not 21. He's 28.
He's 28?
He's 28.
Wow. You know, you look at some people and you're like, how is that? Because this is what I'm going through now. Is I'm like, how is that person younger than me?
I know.
Do you have certain, I'm not going to name any names, but there's certain people that I have bookmarked as like, you are 6 years young. Really?
Jeff Snyder.
How old is he?
Jeff Snyder's like.
He wasn't the one on my mind.
Yeah, he's younger,
but is he,
he's
what,
younger
what is,
than you.
Is he? Okay. Yeah. I can see. He's got a baby face, sort of.
Yeah. Jeff Snyder, there's a few people out there, but either I'm certainly not on that list anymore. As our buddy Sam Levine,
you clean up well though.
Yeah, but I mean, I lost. Like I said, I lost. It was the first time ever. I'm close. I was 213 at my heaviest.
Now you're looking to get under 200.
Yeah, I'm closing in at 200.
Okay,
201 right now.
Yeah,
but it's like it doesn't change the fact that you know you're getting old.
Yeah, stuff hurts.
Yeah,
I am exhausted from the week.
Yeah,
and
I told you,
it hasn't
I hurt
even
myself.
Started yet.
I've always joked about how I hurt myself, my back parallel parking. I got one up. I did it.
Oh, like looking this way?
I did it breathing, dude. I hurt my back
you
breathing.
You hurt yourself
like
breathing.
This. And oh! And I don't know if it's because of the exercise I've been doing a lot lately. I've been doing a lot of the exercise lately.
The
Oculus exercise every day.
What I have noticed as I get older is that I have to be careful. You know when you wake up in the morning and you just want that nice yawn, that just nice stretch? You
got
to be careful with the stretch.
So
you
got
to go, because when you're a kid, you just wake up just like, and then you just get everything loose. If you go too fast with your morning stretch in bed, you may not get out of that bed for the rest of the day.
No, you might have to. And trying to rework the stretch, it's so stupid. You got to move. And
I'll feel something go, and I'm like, okay, now I just got to lean into this, and I just have to literally stay in this position until it fades away. Yeah. Did I tell you, first time in my life, I dealt with carpal tunnel syndrome.
How?
Okay, so if you tell your friends that in your 20s, they're like, you should stop masturbating so much.
Right.
If you tell a friend, now that I'm in my 40s, hey, I have carpal tunnel syndrome. They're like, no, you really have to stop masturbating. Yeah. It's like, it's the same. And I'm like,
that's not it.
That's not it.
Oh, okay.
It is from, it's a combination, and it is just as embarrassing as that.
Okay.
It's a combination of doing a lot of like lifts, like heavy lifts at the gym. But what it's actually the result of is me holding my phone like this. This is my phone. I'm going to show you on my phone grip when I play desert golf.
Why do you play?
It's such a fun game.
But this is what I don't understand.
You take your finger on the screen,
yeah,
and you go back, and that's your tee shot, and you try to get it into a little hole. Here's the best part.
Yes.
10,000 holes. 10,000 holes. And I keep track on my phone, so I play little mini tournaments, do it on airplanes, do it when I'm watching TV with a dog. My life is fantastic.
You're a predictable animal.
And so, but at the 10,000th hole, you know what happens?
No.
You just hit it into the water. You finally found water. You're playing golf in the desert for 10,000 holes. You hit it in there. So what I have to do is I have to delete the app and then reinstall so I can start playing again. But now I can't play the game anymore because this claw grip has given me such bad carpal tunnel. I couldn't write at my computer for a couple days. I couldn't do lifts. Now my bicep is all messed up because of it. So this thing, it has such a, you'd think it just starts in your wrist or your fingers, right. You get some numbness, some tingling. It is now, it's like a disease, Christian. It is like a, some sort of horror movie where the demon spirit is now going all the way up into my arm and it's taken over my entire, we might just have to cut off the right arm.
Well, it's not like, what's Riley got? The itchy leg syndrome or the shaky leg syndrome?
Restless leg syndrome.
Leg, yeah. It is. Like that's the same type of thing, right?
I think they prefer restless over shaky
or itchy.
Shaky has a more
or itchy. Itchy.
Shaky and itchy have
a dog.
In addition to probably being Simpsons characters,
right.
Shaky and itchy have more of a negative connotation than restless. Because if you say, hey, I got shaky leg syndrome, it's like, what are you nervous? If you say I have restless leg syndrome, it's like, wow, you just love working.
Everybody gets so offended at everything. It's like if you're fucking shaking your leg, you got shaky leg syndrome.
Well, maybe it's just restless. Maybe your leg.
It's restless because it's both.
You don't know. You don't know why.
You got shaky restless syndrome.
Your leg could be nervous.
Shaky restless.
It could be anxious leg syndrome
because
your leg has anxiety, but maybe it is restless. Maybe Mark Riley's leg is a free spirit that just wants to go travel the world. And Riley's like, no, we got to stay here and root for every NFC West team.
Yeah. See, it's the same thing like when he used to say, like, he had stomach problems. I said, what, you got the shits? That's what it is. It's got the shit.
That's how you, this is, and I'm glad that now your comeuppance is happening because you always used to say, doesn't matter what's going on in somebody else's life. You can even look at somebody as they walk into a room and be like, what, you got the shits?
Yeah.
Very awkward way to start a conversation with you.
Right.
When you leave the conversation with Christian and you depart and you say, what do you love saying on somebody's way out?
How's your rash?
Hey, I'm going to go somewhere.
I'm going to go take a dump.
You love saying, don't hurt yourself.
Oh, don't hurt yourself.
And now you've hurt yourself.
That was a long time ago.
You hurt yourself breathing.
But it was a couple of days ago. But it didn't hold for as long. The pain didn't hold for as long as when the parallel parking part did.
Yeah.
So.
Now they have cars that'll do it automatically.
It's true.
And as a parallel parking purist, I find it somewhat insulting that now we have this generation of sub-millennials running around having cars park for them. Back in my day, you had to eyeball it.
Hey, you want to talk about parking cars? And you want to talk about cars in general?
You hit a bumper, you live with it.
And you just live with it.
It's life experience.
Yes. I am in awe and surprised and in love with the new system at the Comedy Store as far as the parking lot goes.
Oh, good.
Dude.
Well, we went up there. We rolled up there. So you rolled up there, I should say.
Well, yeah, but because
you drove.
You held my hand there. And it was very nice of you, the way that you did all of it, by the way.
No, you started to find your footing.
I did. I'll tell you why.
We put Christian in a, you remember, this is a deep reference. Garfield and Friends was the Saturday morning cartoon. And then the offshoot of Garfield and Friends was U.S. Acres. And U.S. Acres had all these other fun characters. It was like a bunch of farm animals. And one of them was a very nervous.
You laughing at me. What you got? Spit it out, will you?
One of them was a very nervous, I want to say
we'll
duck.
Say nervous, he's shaking.
It was a duck. His name was Wade Duck.
Yeah.
And Wade was a duck, but he was very nervous about swimming. It's a duck who's got one of those inner tube wraps around his waist the whole time.
Even out
of the water.
The simple things that get you.
Even out of the water, Wade Duck is just walking around. That's who you were.
Yeah,
you got out of the car. You had your little floaties just in case.
Yeah,
but we
took off
the water wing.
It's true. But I will say, like when I was living in like 2007, 2008 at the Comedy Store when I talked to you, and I'm like, yeah, so because Mark, we were shooting something, and Mark said, would you be able to drop me off at the store?
That's not how it went.
Kind of.
You said you wanted to go to the comedy store.
Absolutely.
And
100%.
I said, I have a parking spot that I'm willing to donate to you.
Well, at the time, though, I said, I don't know if I want to go. And he said, well, if you want to come back to my place, then if you want to drop me off, great. If not, don't worry about it. Right?
He went back to my place, and he sat, and he stared at a wall, and he thought.
I thought about it. Yeah. But then I said, yeah, absolutely. So we drove over there, and the way that the Comedy Store parking lot used to work was that you would just, whether you had a spot or not, if you were a paid regular, you pulled into that lot. You pulled in, you're lucky you get there like 8, 9 o'clock. Yeah. You pull into that spot, and then when it's time to leave, you better have a good 45 minutes to spare because they're going to have to
move. Because I'm the guy Tetrising your car out.
Because they're going to have to move all the cars out of the way in order to get your car out if you want to leave. So you got to be prepared for that. So when I tell Mark, I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to park there because it's going to take me forever to get out. He goes, it doesn't work like that anymore. And
yeah, they got good crop of employees there right now.
And that's the other part as far as the comfortability and why the duck thing went away because the first because you always go because look the other part of it is whether you're a regular or not like the one thing I will say about the Comedy Store that you earn your stripes right
yeah.
And it's like and they honor it for as long as you're around
and
they
until you do it can be a very intimidating place
it is and so the thing is. It still doesn't take away from the fact that, and I told you, I don't want to be, and I told you that was my biggest concern. I didn't want to go there and, like, walk up to somebody, one of the employees, and go, without Mark, and go, yeah, I'm a regular.
Yeah.
It just feels douchey.
You don't want to be a wild hog.
It just feels douchey.
You don't want to be getting back on the bike after so long.
Right. And so the second Mark went in, and he was really cool about it, and he introduced me to the new door guy. And who's the guy with the ponytail? The guy, the shaved head ponytail that was sitting
there. Guam Felix.
That's cool, man.
Great sports enthusiast as well.
Big fan of that dude.
Yeah.
Because
he runs a good ship.
Big fan of that dude. Because in the second you said, like, you know, every time went by, fist bump,
yeah.
How's it going? Like, there have been a lot of people, even in the past, that are just douchey sitting on the back.
Yeah.
This guy was cool. I dug this guy. And yeah. So... Then I started to see people that I knew.
Right, so we parked, and then we got out. So you took my spot,
because
I wasn't going to, you know, you gave me a ride. I was going to Uber home eventually.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we had a bunch of commiserating folks of ours that were out on the patio.
Near the bar, yeah.
Walk out, do our greets, which I don't usually like doing before I go up. But, you know, I said hi to some people, and then I'm like, okay, I'm going to go back. I'm going to take Christian back, because Christian has authority back there. And so you and I went back. Said hi, exchanged pleasantries with a couple comedians, said hi to Mark Maron, who was bringing me up later that night.
Yep.
We go into the main room, and...
Tom Papa was on.
Tom Papa was on stage, and then we went back, and then we were hanging out in the green room for a little bit before I went up.
Yes.
And then you wanted to go out and watch Maron's set, the second half of it.
And I watched the end of Papa, by the way, and who was...
You've seen him before.
He's
great.
Many times, but have you seen his bit? That he did about his wife talking, just being miserable in bed.
No,
I mean not miserable sexually. Miserable like when he's talking about like just trying to read and she just goes off in like a Debbie Downer. Like just it's funny, dude. Real funny the way it's just his presentation and everything. Because I think I was talking to Kate about this. But after watching, I watched you. I watched Ingram. I watched Mark Maron.
Martindale,
and I watched everybody that was up there, but to me, to where I'm at right now in my life,
right,
Papa, like, that's the kind of stuff that, like, I, A, related to, and B, saw myself.
He's got a lot of fatherhood stuff going
on. But
it's
just the way in presentation and stuff, too, where he, and as I was watching, you know, like, because Mark Maron has such a unique, like, thing about him,
can
get away with it.
Because that bit he closed on.
I missed it.
Was killing me.
I saw
backstage.
What he did. Did you see the thing he did about Bezos and Branson?
No.
Oh, he called them two rich cunts. That's what he called them. But he does it in such a way. I felt like I was watching an episode of Glow when he did it, you know? And it's like the way that it was so funny the way he did it. But
he's very comfortable in his own skin.
Yes. And then Ingram is just, you know, a samurai. Like master when it comes to the way the stuff he's talking about, he's talking about what was he talking about? Ass eating was the cause of COVID, and it's just incredible. Just watch it. It's like certain edgy things that he was doing, and watch. Obviously, you have your unique style, the references and the stuff. Did I ever tell you? I don't know. I'm sure over our years, but what really impressed me about the first time I remember actually watching you do stand up.
Oh boy!
Did I ever tell you this?
That I carried my weight well.
Yeah, it was absolutely. Look at this.
You carry it in your face and your boobs well.
It looked
Mark.
Like you just ate a big piece of cake, and I can't tell.
Mm, yeah, and it was delicious.
No. It was at the Comedy Store. It was in the OR, and you. I think we had shot. Maybe shot Straws, or we definitely kind of hung out a couple times before. But I was like, I was still going to the store a bit. But it was like when you were working there, I'm pretty sure. And you did.
I was there until the end of probably 2008 or 9.
Yeah. So you were, and this was like 2007. So
I'm probably still clocked in, but to be honest,
I probably still have checks there. Yeah. But you were, but you were up there, and you were. And the references were coming, and they were improv, and they were quick. I was like, and that was the first time I remember going, this motherfucker's quick. And it was something you were doing about Return of the Jedi, and it wasn't like a bit.
Sounds on brand.
But it wasn't a bit that you, and it's a bummer, because I've never heard you do it since.
Mm.
And it was definitely improv, because someone had thrown it out. It was like, it might have been, Bilek. Bilek?
Maybe. Dan Bilek, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was Dan. And he threw something at you, and then you started on this whole tangent about Return of the Jedi. Yeah. And I was like, okay, well, we're going to be friends. I could tell that. But it was the quickness of it that was when I first realized, okay. And that's when, then I said, well, you should come to Luna Park, Room 5. And that's when
Cesar
Franco and all that shit. But anyway, so just different styles. But as I'm writing all this new stuff, I'm like, yeah, like to more into the family life stuff. And
it's just the sort of the mundane things about a family existence is one of the things that Papa excels at, because he comes from the Seinfeld mold, because he opened for Seinfeld for a long time. And you can actually see him briefly in the documentary Comedian that Seinfeld did in 2000 or 2001, whenever he did it. But he's just around. In the green room hanging out a couple times. Right. And that's like, and I always bust his chops about it when we're talking, is that I saw him. He was the first like comedian that I saw live in a comedy club.
Oh, really?
I saw him at Dangerfields in New York when I went up there for like a 3-day spring break sort of situation when I was in college.
Yeah.
And I wanted to go to a comedy club just to kind of, you know, you start to think about it. Let's see how this feels. And nobody else up there that night was particularly memorable in a good way.
Who you remember him?
But Papa went up in the middle of the show and just crushed. He had the suit on, and he's just got such a polish about him.
Right.
He's clean,
and
he just does everything well.
His timing was just insane.
Yeah.
Like the way it was, you can just tell how seasoned he was when he was doing it. It was the jokes, it was the timing of it, it was the faces he was making. It was it was all of that, and it just reminded me, as I've been prepping more, of the movements, that everything counts. And as I was walking, practicing out a thing last week, I was going in my head. That's how I always used to do it.
With the Oculus on?
Not with the Oculus on yet, but you better bet your ass I have a bit of.
You can tell
Oculus.
Your family that you're exercising, you know.
And
if you're working out bits, if you have the Oculus, just tell them you're exercising.
I know, but I just realized how people don't understand that, like, every little thing, that's the good prep that goes into it, whether it's a movement, facial tic,
just a look,
how much that goes into it that looks like it's organic happening in the moment. That has been, like, the moves that Sebastian does, those are planned, timed out move, but they look so natural and flow because that's who he is. And even when he goes, what? That's, like, every moment inside of his face is timed out to further out that joke that he's working on, to make that joke that much stronger, make that moment that much funnier, because you get that leap of a laugh that you're like, if you do that little face, like, the meat is in the actual crafting of the joke and the punchline of the joke, but if you do that little face or you do something too, that just gives them that little hump of, oh, that's funny, that they're already in this mode. You're setting them up to get the laugh now, as opposed to, you know, just sitting, having them sit there with the joke. You don't do anything. It's not prepared. Just the line comes out without any other delivery, and then it doesn't hit as hard, as opposed to certain things you do, movements, faces.
They know the magic trick is good,
right?
But then when you actually show them the rabbit, they're like, oh, that's great. And you can tell a guy like Sebastian too has just been doing big houses, doing theaters and doing stadiums sometimes for a while, because the movements get bigger the house is, and so he now has all these giant movements, and it works a lot better with a lot of people,
right,
than it does, like, back in the day when it was, like, maybe 6 people in the OR, and it's like, you have to make a personal connection with them. You can't connect to a room. You just have to make a connection with these 5 tourists from Omaha.
Right. Well, because you feel it, that energy is steering you.
Mm-hmm.
You're not steering the energy. The energy is steering you because
it's the force.
It really is.
It surrounds us. It penetrates us.
It's weird because I don't think a lot of people understand. I mean, I assume that you have the same thing. I think most comedians do, but isn't it bizarre? And this only happens to me on stage. It doesn't happen anywhere else in life.
Where you just feel calm.
100%.
You're like, oh, thank God.
100%.
Thank God I'm here
and
again.
And it's one of the reasons I think that I need to go back there because it's the most, like the last year and a half for a lot of different people, but for me in general, like I've been like I'm just not as happy as I was before the freaking pandemic.
Many people. A lot of people are now more of a raw nerve.
Yeah, and I think that I need it back in my life. But the thing that I always knew, and it's like a weird, like,
Progressive presents Adjusting to the Suburbs.
I never thought about space in my cramped apartment, but in this house, all I see is empty space. The sofa and ottoman look like tiny islands in a sea of hardwood floors. I could get two ottomans in the living room, but then I'd need another sofa. I could tell people I'm into minimalism.
Anyway, when you save with Progressive by bundling your home and auto, that's the easy part of adjusting to the suburbs. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company coverage provided in service by affiliates and third-party insurers.
I don't know what it is. Gift? I don't know. Curse? For some reason on stage, I can... You know, right now we're talking, but you can't, like, hear your thoughts on what's coming next.
I just hear one loud
you
voice.
Just, right. You know what you're going to say beforehand, but, like, as you're talking, when I'm talking on stage, I can talk and think clearly at the same time. Yeah. Like, meaning that it's, like, not... And I guess it's harder to explain, but I mean, where it's you, when you're actually, I'm in the middle of conversation and I can clearly read. It's like a computer going on the other side of, oh, I remember to say this is coming up as I'm talking. Like,
it's like RoboCop's screen.
Yes.
Where RoboCop's walking and he can see what's in front of him and he knows I got to get Clarence Boddicker, but he also has all these stats. He's got all these other factors that are going 100%.
It's like Terminator. And like when it was like, fuck you asshole. When you choose the one that's coming up and it's weird. Like, I'll be in the middle. I'll be having a full-on conversation and talking with the audience, and it's like a whole bunch of things that are coming in there, and at the right moment clicks, oh, yeah, say that, boop, boop, as I'm talking. And it's like, I can't do that in life. I can't do that right now. Like, right now I have to, like, okay, stop. Think, a couple things kind of come in, but, like, full-on two conversations happening at the same time, clearly, and not – I'm definitely sure that I've never been diagnosed for ADHD. I'm sure I have. But I don't have it on stage. If that makes sense.
Yeah. I noticed that the first time I ever sat on stage to tell a joke in Atlanta at that comedy club is as soon as I planted my foot, the big white light was, I can still think.
Right.
And I can still improvise. And I can still, like, shift what I was going to say. Like, it's not like I have to stick to this script. I have total freedom to do whatever I want to, but I'm still within myself. I'm not, like, my brain isn't freaking out.
No.
And so now I'm at the point now where, like, sometimes I'll talk shit to myself on stage, too. Like if I'm doing an hour somewhere and I put a piece that I wanted to close with in the middle, and now I can't bail out. I have to finish the bit. But in my head, I'm like, you dumb motherfucker.
Yeah.
You idiot.
Yeah.
Now what are you going to close with, stupid?
Right.
And so
you hear yourself, but it's funny. Yeah. Like, everything that you just said as you're talking.
Yeah.
And, yeah. As you're talking.
And you just trust yourself to be able to reshuffle the deck. It's really just, it's comedians and pilots. Because when you're on a plane and it takes off and then you get to cruising altitude, the pilot comes on the mic to talk to you. He's like, hey, if you look over there, you see the Grand Canyon. Yeah, he's talking to us, and you believe he's having a conversation with us. He's also doing something else. He also has another task. He is steering the ship and making sure we don't crash. That's the job of a comic.
It is, and it's weird because you mentioned that thing about doing the closing bit and say, what are you going to work with now? It's like every comedian is always working with that, because even going back into this and revisiting all of it as I'm writing this new stuff, like I have this one thing that I'm working on the hardest, right? And I'm pretty confident that it's will do well, but am I confident enough that I can close with it? No, I got to try it out a couple times. You know, it's like I'm confident that it'll work. I'm confident that the timing of it, I'm excited about that. If I hit it the right way, I'm pretty excited about it because this is the one I've worked on the most, maybe than any other thing I've ever worked on. But
Those are the ones that burn me when I put them earlier, is when I know that I want to close on something because it's either going to reference something earlier in the set,
right,
or you just know that you have like boom, 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 and then thank you, good night.
Yeah.
So I personally, I've just been with this new hour, I have like five different things that I have just sort of rotated in the barrel.
Yeah.
When I end like what the last joke is, I don't even remember the one I did that night, but it was like, it was one of the ones in contention, but they all just like, I just have to settle on one and then just chisel it to make sure it has like the sort of ending that I would want.
Yeah.
And it was, but I mean, that's the beauty of a place like the store, is that you just get to go
keep working.
You get
it
to
out.
Go pray. It's the X-Men danger room. You get to go in and you either, sometimes it's dialed up to 10, sometimes it's at a 2.
Right.
And you just get to figure out the pulse of the room, the pace of it, and you go up and you get your work up.
Is there any other better feeling though, when you have like three spots at the store and you come up with a new bit, you try it the first time,
mm-hmm.
it gets the laughs you wanted to, but you're like, oh, what if I would have tried that? Then you can jump up 15 minutes later in the other room, try it again. Oh, and then it worked. Like, just be able to work out the same joke in the same night.
The best feeling for me is when it doesn't really matter which one you do first, is because they're close enough together where you can walk to one and the other is the Laugh Factory in the Comedy Store. Is if you do something, if you're working out something at the Comedy Store and then you have a set at the Laugh Factory later that night,
right?
You do it at the Comedy Store. And then you walk down and you're like, I know this is going to literally blow the roof off the stage.
It's the same for the improv, too.
When you do it at the Laugh Factory, then you walk down to the Comedy Store. It worked great, and you're like, okay, but I know I was a little loose. 100%. I need to tighten that bolt.
Right.
I need to put a little more elbow grease into that because you may not be able to get away with the same thing.
Right. Well, I can speak more on the improv because I told you I'd never gone up to the Laugh Factory
which
before.
Which is wacky to me.
And that was a stupid choice as a young fool. But
now you're an old fool.
No, I'm an old fool.
Who injures himself breathing.
Right. So maybe I can do that on the Laugh Factory stage. But
I can't wait to throw out your back. Is that why you don't laugh at my jokes anymore?
That's it.
You're afraid to laugh.
I'm laughing inside, really, but I'm just very cautious.
You're like, oh, no.
Right. No, can't do it.
Already cracked a rib.
Oh, man, I'm crying. Her hernia. That's it. It's over. It's a good joke, Mark. Now
all the king's horses and all the king's men.
That's it. Couldn't put Happy Harloff back together again.
We don't have a king or horses, but we got some duct tape. We'll do what we can.
That's it. But I was, I would do the improv, and it was the same thing. It was, the improv is, if you have a joke that you're doing at the improv, you work it out at the store.
Then you get on the improv stage, and you're like, oh, this is what...
OR, man.
That's what I tell people all the time, is the store is great, but you have got to get out of that place occasionally, just because you can't get stuck in one rut too long, because the Comedy Store has that darkness to it where if that's the only place you're going up, you just start to, it starts to get in you a little bit.
Right, you think this is all comedy is, like every room is going
to
be like,
I mean, you need to go on the road, 100%. You need to do other clubs, just to remind yourself that you're funny.
Right.
Because you may not get that reminder for a while at the Comedy Store, which is how it's designed.
Yes, and also because the Comedy Store now has become a place where patrons have come to hang out and come to watch comedy and come to be their, like, you know, returning customers coming back and they become that experience crowd that it's like, no, I just saw so-and-so here and this. It's not like going to, you know, a place in like Ohio that's just, they're out, tonight's their big night.
Right.
They're going on a date night tonight.
Who's going to go up? Does anybody have the
nerves? Right. They decided to do a comedy club. Like, it's dad's birthday and he wants to go to the comedy club. You know, like those people are going to be a lot easier than the reoccurring Los Angeles Comedy Club patrons.
Jaded, vampires,
because they've just been,
soulless.
Not to mention that they might be agents or actors or producers or whatever who just like, yeah, go ahead, make me laugh.
Right,
just sitting there. I mean, it's the crowd on Saturday night was fantastic in the main room.
They've been great.
They were fun.
They've been great.
They were really fun. But like just watching everybody, and I thought everybody had a really good set. Everyone moved the room very well. I don't know who opened when I got there. Papa was on, so I don't know who opened. Who was the first?
That's a great.
Who opened the room? Because that's,
I have no idea.
It's a big thing, no pun intended. Being able to open that room and set the mood.
You got to set the pace.
Set the mood.
It's the beauty of you never master it. There's always different spots. There's always different ways. Like following Marin is a lot different than if you go up cold.
Yes.
Or if you're going up second, or if Argus is bringing you up. It's just always a different temperature, and that's the fun of it.
The big thing it's about that is when you...
Okay, we know the name of the show.
I know. I said it twice and I heard myself. But it's also, like anything else, like even Steph and I were talking about like dating, and it's a confidence.
Mm-hmm. That congrats. I didn't know you That's awesome.
Yes, my wife doesn't.
Good for you too.
Yeah. but we were talking about the confidence of men or women. You just feel it right away. The audience smells it in a second.
Right.
If you're not confident, they're really going to make you.
They'll eat you alive.
Eat you alive. So if you're following someone like Marc Maron, you've got to pretend when you go up. But you've been on all these different shows, and you have this podcast. You've got to have the energy that, like, yeah, I'm a regular at this place, and I'm gonna be here as much as anybody else too. And you got to have that confidence of just that. And you did. So you came out like, oh, this is Mark. You did. You maybe not inside.
No, I did. But it takes years to just get that veneer off of like, I can't believe I'm on this stage, or it's like this guy that I've looked up to. It's like at some point, and it's no disrespect to any of the other comics, but at some point just in your head, or at least the way I'm wired, I don't care who's bringing me up when they're bringing me up.
Right.
It's like that stage is mine.
Right. Yeah, as you should.
I own that stage now. Off you go.
The one that... And I had a good set still after he brought me up that I've told you about the time Dice brought me up, right? Because, you know, I was a massive Dice fan growing up as a kid.
Yeah.
And did I ever tell you about what he said when he brought me up? I just got made it's one of my favorite stories ever. So he goes up, and he, to his credit too, because Eddie Griffin and everybody was doing 3-4 hours. Dice did like, I don't know, half an hour.
Dice would stick to his time.
He'd stick to his time. Yeah. And he had like 2 spots, and he did. It was like back to back. They would do that sometimes. Mm-hmm. And he did the 30 minutes, and he was like, "All right, who's up next?" Right? And then I will say, and I'll go back to the story in a second. I forgot to tell you this. I did get very, very sad.
Missing Jeff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I walked into the OR.
Yeah.
It was the first time I'd walked in since he passed. And I walked in, and I looked over, and he wasn't there. I'd never seen that before.
I love that his name is up there, though.
Me too.
His name is up there. The name Jeff Scott is up there, but he's the guy who would be tickling the ivories, but also if the comic didn't know who's next or if somebody didn't show up for your spot.
That's why I bring him up, yeah.
Wait, because I even brought that up when one of the times I was, you know, eulogizing him is just like, that's what I missed. That's what I was telling myself. That's how you get through the pandemic. You just cannot wait to get back on the R stage, have a good set, and then say, who's our next comic, Jeff?
Right.
And so Dice asked him that.
So Dice asked him, Jeff, who's our next comic? And he goes, it's Christian Orlov.
Yeah, and you just hope
that. Because Jeff and I were very close.
Yeah.
And he was very encouraging to me and everything, too.
It's not the easiest name to hear if you haven't heard it before to nail it.
Dice had no idea who I was. And Dice goes, yeah, this guy. You've seen this guy. On fucking Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, right.
You've seen him all over the place. He's been on every television set known to man. Big star. Fucking Christian Orlov.
He got the name.
And I was like, that. And I probably said it just like this. That was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, thank you, Dice. And yeah, it walked off.
Dice thinks you're on Saturday Night Live. Pretty cool.
It was. I'd never forget it. It was that was a great moment. I laughed uncontrollably about it. Do you remember Christy Miller? Do you ever meet Christy Miller? So Christy Miller.
Leather Pants Christy.
Yes. So Christy Miller, I had met at Luna Park back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And she was very close with Dice.
Yeah.
And
she's very cool. I liked her a lot.
She was a sweetheart. Yeah. An absolute sweetheart. And she introduced me to Dice in the back area right before you, the bar. You go around the side, the little area before you go to the outside, and they still have the 2 little black couches right there. So this is the bar dock here, and then you go.
No, they got
rid of those little 2 black couches. Like,
yeah,
and you go up the stairs.
And the cocaine table next to it.
Yeah, it's gone. Okay. Yeah. So Dice is there, and it was the first time I ever met him. I start talking, and I start telling him about like things, and I told him about this bit that he did that I really loved. That was the when he talked about dating a girl after a little bit, and he's trying to break up with her, he doesn't know how, and he goes and he's oh, look at that, he's like, you on a nice, you know, a nice date with the parents, and oh, look at that, my balls are out of my pants. They're in the marinara sauce. Look at that. My fucking balls. He does this whole thing. 13-year-old kid loves it. So I start telling him, and he goes, oh, yeah, I remember that bit. It was a good bit. I love that bit. Tell me the rest of that bit. And like, I'm giving him his bits, and he's laughing. So it was great.
Well, it was at that same spot where Chris Rock had gotten off stage, and this is like 94, 90, or maybe early 95, probably 94. And Dice was was around and he was hanging out back there. Chris gets off stage and he goes back and him and Dice are talking for a little bit at that at those two black couches.
Yeah.
And Dice asked him, you know, well, you're not on SNL anymore. What's going on? And he said, well, yeah, now I'm taping this HBO thing.
Oh,
and,
right. Is that the one, the big one?
Bring the Pain, yeah. And his first HBO special, which still might be the most perfect hour of comedy really I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And but he's about to tape, and he just, like, didn't, I guess, seem that enthused. And Dice just looks at him, he's like, you got to train for this like you're Rocky. Like, he just gave him this, like, big emotional pep talk to just get as ready as possible for this moment that is going to be, could be huge for you.
That's awesome.
And then we get Bring the Pain, the best special ever.
And that was the thing, you know, Dice still, I still don't think he gets, I mean, I know from, like, people the story does, but I don't think he gets the credit that he deserves because of his personality,
right? You know what I mean? When people try to chalk him up as like a flash in the pan or like a chauvinist and all that stuff, like there's definitely elements
and
of
his
that
character
too,
they did would never fly today
to that character and to those jokes. Yeah. But when you just watch him do stand up, he did this bit about being at Staples and just trying to figure out how to buy office supplies at Staples that was killing me.
It's that stuff. I remember. It's funny you say that because I remember.
And it had nothing to do with sex or anything.
That's what I was about to say. When I went to the OR, the first time because I had Dice when I was younger, when I was like 13. I saw him at Radio City Music Hall. My dad got me tickets to see him. Go see that. I saw him at Radio City Music Hall.
Were you yelling out nursery rhymes?
No, I was too in awe of him, right? So, like, I was...
And you didn't want to get grounded.
Right. I had seen him there. You know, I was a big fan of him. Like, so much so, we took a limo to go see him. Like, a bunch of friends
that's
and
how
I.
You do it.
Like, with the whole shebang. It was the first time I ever smoked pot ever in my life was in that limo to see Dice.
Transformative evening.
Yes. So, but anyway, so when I first got to the store and just working out before I got passed, he was going up and I'm like, oh, Dice, I got to watch. And I remember thinking, and I had seen all of his specials on HBO. I'd seen everything. And I remember like towards the end when he started to go down a bit, you know, when it went, because it's, anytime you hit that plateau,
only one way to go.
There's only one way to go, and it was right when that shift came in, like from the late '80s to the '90s of the shift in just culture in general, what was acceptable, what was not,
and some of the bottom started. The comedy boom of the '80s itself was starting
totally.
People were realizing, oh, we just can't put up a comedy club like it's a Starbucks and have it succeed, and so a lot of clubs were closing down in the early mid '90s, and it didn't really have a resurgence until the 2000s with your boy Dane Cook.
And also the internet. The internet completely changed comedy.
Dane was one of the first ones to have like this is a professional, cool website. This is like a fun place to hang out on the information superhighway.
And he was doing that like in like 2000. He started his website and stuff. I remember that when that's how he would get people to.
Mm-hmm.
But with Dice, knowing that, you know, I'd seen him kind of going on that downwards, not spiral, but it was different. And he was relying on a lot of the sex stuff because that's what the brand was. And I always remember thinking to myself, I wonder what he would be like if he wasn't just focused on the sex stuff. And then I saw him in the OR one night. And I was like, oh, I got to watch Dice. It's the first time Radio City Music Hall seeing him. And he did. It must have been an hour. It must have been or close to it. I don't know how long he was up there, but he was up there for a while. And he wasn't doing a lot of sex jokes at all. And it was just talking about these things and talking to the crowd, talking about similar to what you were talking about, just things that he has been doing in his life. And it was a riot. It was so funny. And I'm like, where's that? But that's what I mean. He doesn't get enough credit because he's still, whether it's going to Vegas and ruling Vegas for as long as he did, you know, after the boom of his career and being on Entourage and having his own show and getting being in an Oscar winning movies, and whether it's Star Is Born or what's the one with Cate Blanchett
that he Blue Jasmine.
Yeah.
It was great in that.
The guy's had a great career.
It's been a very it's been a much more eclectic career than you would expect for somebody who came to the Comedy Store as Andrew Silverstein and then started going by Andy Clay, and then the Dice thing happened and then it exploded. And you're like, okay, well, that's you for the rest of your life. And he's been able to somewhat maintain that image, but also be able to veer in different directions. And despite the puppet line that
have you ever talked about that on
many times?
Oh, you've talked about it
with
on
him?
Air? Oh,
no, with him.
With afterwards?
Yeah.
Oh, you've never told me
that. Always, Dice and I have always been very cool.
I know. Can we tell the story of what happened or no?
I don't care.
Okay. And correct me if I'm wrong. What had happened? He was on Rogan.
I'll tell the story.
Okay, please.
So Rogan was doing his show, taping out of the Ice House.
Yes.
At that time, and so whoever had spots at the Ice House, we just kind of pop in and hang out with Joe and just kind of shoot the breeze for a little bit. So I can't remember who was on the show. I think it was me. It might have been Greg Fitzsimmons.
It was his son, right? It was Dice's son.
And Dice's son Max, right. Who is a hell of a drummer.
Yeah.
They're both great musicians. His kids. And Max and I had seen each other, like, always saw each other at the store. So we just always, like, you know, kind of shot the shit. And so we were making, I think I was telling him, like, why didn't you play lead guitar instead of, like, bass or drums or whatever? Because lead guitars, like, are, you know, the sexier. Yeah. Those are the ones that get all the groupies. And Dice took offense. I guess Dice thought I was rat. So I knew Dice and knew Max. I guess Dice just didn't put it together.
You thought you were ragging on his kid.
Then I was ragging, which I probably came off as. Right. I have no idea. But Max and I were cool.
Right.
And so then Dice.
So you're busting his balls the way you bust mine.
Right. Yeah. And then Dice went on Rogan and was mad. And then and to Joe's credit, Joe's like, no, he was just.
Yeah, he's like, he's a good guy.
Yeah, no, it was just breaking
balls. You fucking puppet screaming. So you've talked to him about it afterwards.
Yeah.
So what did you say? That you never told me about.
Oh, no.
We always laugh
about the puppet. It was just so, like, you know, innocuous. We're at the comedy store, you know, see each other, talk. And I guess I told him at some point, like, I wasn't offending. Like, Max and I are cool, and I'm sure he doesn't care.
Right. He was just doing it for the bit anyway.
Probably.
Right?
Yeah.
That's what, I mean, that's the other thing.
But no, we see each other all, you know.
Yeah. Does he go up a lot at the store still?
I don't know if I've seen him at the store since stuff's back, but he's been hitting the road, I think.
Yeah. Well, because Eleanor and him are still.
Eleanor and him are great. Yeah. And I think.
So good seeing her, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. She's just one of the bright Staples. Lights at that place. Yeah. Yeah. She's great.
Yeah. So, I mean, Eleanor Kerrigan, who she was a waitress at the time.
She was a waitress at the store. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we were just goofing. It was great because and I told this story to Kate the other day, and for those people who have to hear it again, but you didn't hear it. I don't think you heard this. Oh, you did, because it was me. No, it was me, Ingram, and Eleanor. You haven't heard this yet. So the bartender at the front, what was her name?
Jenny. She's great.
So Jenny Comedy Club carded me. Did I tell you this?
No.
So Andrew Guy was in the front, and he's like, let me buy you a drink, man. Mm-hmm. He's a shithouse story, right? So I'm like, all right, no problem. So he goes... So he tells Jenny, he's like, this guy used to do comedy here. And in my head, I'm like, when you say that, she could just think that I was at the Belly Room in 2006.
Yeah.
And
because,
doing a show.
Because Jenny knows, she's been there, she's heard all the BS stories.
Right.
And,
So I was like, I'm a regular at the club. I just, she's like, real quick, she goes, where's your name? And within seconds, I go, it's in the back wall before the entrance, right next to Ari, near James Painter, right by Brody. And she goes, you're a regular. She's like, she goes, regulars know how to spot their
names. Oh, that's great.
Their names out quick. And then I was talking to Eleanor and Ingram in the back. We're just laughing in the back. And she comes up. She's like, all right, he's legit. He's legit. So she was cool. It was like, I got to tell you, I felt very welcomed by the staff. And in general, the atmosphere there was pretty – it was more welcoming than I remember, even back in the day when I was.
As you should have,
and
we had a bunch of our community folk show up there by the end of the night. I didn't tell you, maybe I did text you this, just because you know me and you know what a fan I am of certain numbers.
Yeah,
and I love, you know, I buy everybody's drinks up there because I get them super cheap, and the total. I won't say how many drinks I bought or how many people I was buying drinks for. The total
on your tab
bill.
Your tab.
Guess what
it?
The number was.
Your tab.
Yeah. And this is
after
not,
discount.
I'm not trying to get you to be like, oh, it was this exorbitant number. It's a special number.
Yeah. $51.50. Well. Was it?
It's $51.50. And I looked at it and I'm like,
did you save it?
Huh?
Did you save it?
No. I might have taken a picture of it.
Save that.
But it was also funny because that boombox, like the it's last hour cheap. They had been playing nothing but Van Halen. Then she gives me the bill. And so I tip a lot there. And it was like $51.50. And I'm like, this is so perfect.
Yeah. Well, especially when you've had this, you just had this miraculous season where we've had two matches so far. $51.50.
That are $51.50. And they've been legendary.
Yeah. So you had Dimolanta. You got Dimolanta and Damon, and then the Odd Couple versus Shazam.
And the Odd Couple versus Shazam,
So it's.
What was the final score of Knapsack Whitworth? That was like 52.
That was probably
51,
something.
I remember it was close.
It was a big score. It was just specifically hitting 51-50 twice in a season is. And then you getting a receipt that's $51.50.
Yeah, that's take your luck to Vegas.
It's pretty nuts. You know what is also nuts that we're pretty excited about, ladies and gentlemen. I talked to you about that already, but nope, not that one, and not the little doggy, and not the spectacular. But ladies and gentlemen, you know what I'm just telling you about
I shudder to see what pick is next.
I can't even tell you anymore. I'll just
tell it's
you,
me.
Like yeah, it's just you, ladies and gentlemen. We're excited. Mark's actually excited about this too because he's worked with this company before. But this is have you heard of Cuts?
Oh, I love Cuts clothing.
Great.
I got a bunch of shirts from them. I was wearing a Cuts shirt at the Comedy Store that night.
Cuts, they're very comfortable. And want to let you guys know that the sport of business means demanding excellence from your craft and your wardrobe. And your fits have to be versatile. Blending timeless style and comfort so that you look as good as you feel. And for that, there are Cuts clothing. They've taken a classic men's fashion staple, the plain tee, and they refined it, combining premium quality with a minimalist aesthetic. Built for performance in the boardroom, the bar, the gym, Cuts clothing keep you sharp wherever the game takes you. You take a plain tee, but you can make it Tony Stark. That's right. The bleeding edge of fabric technology meets the man confident enough to wear it.
Thank you.
They sent me some very comfortable. I got a hoodie, which I love the quality.
The fit is great, but what I love about this shirt the most is how it combats one of my many personal issues,
which is
the armpit sweat.
Oh, yeah. No.
It masks it better than I have ever worn in a shirt before. Because I was wearing them like, it's hot in L.A. right now. I can put these things on. I can go walk the dog. I can just, and I look down and I just, knowing me and knowing the colors, because my color palette, I could only wear like black shirts.
Right.
And now I have like a cool, like an army green one.
Yeah, the colors
are
great.
A cool brown one. Yep. And nothing's bleeding through. It's amazing.
Well, so this is a little bit about the company, if you didn't know. In 2016, Cuts founder Steve Burrell set out to create clothes ready for every occasion the modern man faces. He started by reinventing the T-shirt, and he really has. The end result, GQ magazine calls it the only shirt worth wearing. Is it the perfect T-shirt? It's accomplished. Next, Cuts set out to create fabric uniquely engineered for each clothing style. Consider the new Cuts hoodie, which is what I have, and I love it. Where
I gotta get one of those. Yeah,
dude, I gotta show you. It's super comfortable. They developed the Hyperloop French Terry fabric, a textile that is that's temperature controlled, and it's ageless. So you'll never need to take it off, and you certainly won't want to. They also have wrinkle free. The polo. I also have the polo.
Look at the polo.
Yeah, man. They sent me a bunch of stuff. I love it. I've been wearing them. I think I wore it on the show already once before. I just didn't talk about it yet, but now I'm talking about it. And each piece of clothing is designed with custom engineered fabric, expertly graded for the perfect fit. It arms you for every challenge and opportunity. It's not just a lifestyle, guys. It's not just clothing. It's office leisure apparel for the sport of business. You get 15% off of your first order, and it is worth it. I'm telling you, 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/SENLive. That is cutsclothing.com/SENLive. Get 15% off the only shirt worth wearing. I love this stuff.
I will be wearing a Cut shirt probably on stage.
When?
In Seattle, July 24th. You can get tickets at markellis.live. Can we put a link in the description here?
Yes, you got to send it to me, otherwise I'll forget.
I will send it to you, and we'll put it in the link because it is. Tickets are going well. I'm actually very enthused
with
that. That's a great question.
You probably know that.
There's two rooms there.
Yeah.
And so one room is, I think, like 100 and the other one is like 300 or maybe 250, something like
that. So you're doing both?
I'm in the big room.
You're in the big room. So
yes.
250.
How many
we got left?
I have no idea.
All right. Let's sell
those. I hear tickets are selling well. So
let's sell it out. Let's get
sell it out. Let's go Seattle.
Me. Able to get to Seattle.
Ken Knapsack.
Who else?
Daniel Bridge-Gadd. Got a couple locals going up.
Good.
Should be a fun time.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm looking forward to.
Special guest in the crowd.
Yeah, October 9th.
Very special guest.
October 9th, New York.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't put him on sale yet. I'm patiently waiting, but we should be putting him
you
on sale.
You look patient.
We're putting him on sale. We're just
you don't have
when.
Shaky leg at all
no,
getting these tickets on sale.
I'm literally shaking my leg right now thinking about it. But but the October 8th looks like we're going to be doing a show, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, we got. There's opportunity there.
There's opportunity. So that's something that we could be doing. Also, you been watching anything worth a while?
No,
just TV, sports.
I watched a lot of shark movies doing research for Versus.
Okay, what shark movies did you watch?
I'll give you some trivia, some shark movie trivia.
Okay,
between The Shallows, Deep Blue Sea,
you
and The Meg.
Yeah,
which movie did like the best at the domestic box office?
give me one more time.
Try to rank them in order.
Meg, Deep Blue Sea, and what was the third?
The Shallows.
Hmm. It's hard because of inflation, but I would say...
We adjust for inflation.
Here. Okay.
Yeah. It's our expert researcher,
I know
Mark
I'm
going to
regret this. This is the list I was going to go with, and then I'll give you my official list. The list I was going to go with was The Shallows, Deep Blue Sea, and then The Meg.
Okay.
And I'm going to switch it up, and I'm going to say The Deep Blue Sea, Meg, and then The Shallows.
All right. You had your initial instinct.
Yes.
Was so dead wrong.
Okay, good. Was this how about the second?
You reverse it. The Meg did the best.
Meg did the best.
Yeah, and then Deep Blue Sea. And then The Shallows.
Okay, so
they all did over 100 million globally.
Interesting. Okay.
But here in the States,
Deep Blue Sea.
The Meg, then Deep Blue
Meg.
Sea.
Right.
Yeah. It was a pretty tight. I think the Meg did like 14 million more than Deep Blue Sea.
I don't remember the Meg doing, I remember it being not good.
I didn't really care for it that much.
Yeah, it's not that good.
I really did like, I appreciated The Shallows. And Deep Blue Sea, I had watched it, like I rented it when it came out from Hollywood Video or whatever.
Right, right.
And I was surprised at that moment, when that moment happens, which is great. But the movie's really fun.
It's fun. I remember it being fun.
But it's also just like, because you can't remake.
I didn't like The Shallows.
You can't remake Jaws.
Yeah.
You cannot remake Jaws.
Right.
So what Deep Blue Sea did is like, well, we're not trying to remake Jaws. We're going to make a horror movie that happens to have sharks that are genetically modified. And they give a good enough reason where we're trying to experiment on these sharks so we can help humans.
Right.
But we're still in an isolated area because you're in this research facility in the middle of nowhere. And so you have a very limited amount of people. You have sharks swimming around that are genetically modified, so they know how to turn off security cameras.
That was...
It's cool.
It is. And it's way more... You can explain it better than Jaws 4, that the shark is just pissed off.
Poor Jaws 4. Jaws the Revenge. So between Jaws the Revenge and Deep Blue Sea, Jaws the Revenge and Deep Blue Sea 2.
I didn't know there was one.
Which movie is higher rated on the tomato meter?
It has to be Deep Blue Sea 2.
The answer is a trick question. They're both at 0%.
They're both at 0%.
Zero.
It's bad.
Now, Jaws the Revenge does rebound with the audience score.
Okay.
It's all the way up to 15%.
I saw that movie in the theater with my grandfather.
Jaws the Revenge?
Yeah, it's a bad movie.
I saw that movie.
There's two versions of that movie, by the way. You know that, right? There's a version where Mario Peebles doesn't die.
Oh, I heard that. No. Then I saw the version where he doesn't die.
You saw the version, and that was like on TV.
Yes, it was taped from TV. Because I remember the kids were so excited. We were maybe like, I don't know, 5 years old when it was going to debut on TV. Maybe I must have been a little bit older, but...
About seven.
It came on. I was seven or eight. Yeah,
87.
Yeah, we were still living in Fairfield, California, and I remember my sister was sitting in the chair. I wanted to sit in to watch it. And I was pissed.
You born in California?
No, I was born in North Carolina.
Oh, okay, thanks.
And so we were stationed in Northern California by this time.
Right.
She's sitting in the chair I want to sit in, and I'm mad about it. But I guess I had seen Jaws the Revenge before she did, and so I knew what was coming. And early in the movie, Sean, the youngest of the Brodies,
eats it. Yeah.
And the shark popping out of the water is awesome. And so I timed it. I snuck up behind her. Shark popping out of the water, and I scared her.
You knew it.
Popcorn went. I got in so much trouble. I had to vacuum all that
stuff.
But
you thought it was the funniest thing in the world.
Oh, it was worth totally it. That's a very early comedian knowing when something is going to work.
100%.
Damn the torpedoes. Don't worry about the consequences. No. You can ground me for a month. I am taking this shot.
It was like when I got banned from that comedy club in Minnesota.
It was a little different.
Not really. I knew it was going to work.
You ran the light by a mile.
7 minutes.
Yes. I did not run the light.
No. I would never do that a million years now, but like that whole, I just couldn't believe it. 3 minutes that guy gave me? I was a regular at the store.
You're surfing.
Pompous asshole.
And you were having a great set.
Yeah.
And you just then, you just don't want to get off the
mic
wave.
Off of me. And I still kept going.
I would have done the same thing. You and I have done the same thing.
Tommy Savitt was not happy with me.
Tommy Savitt.
You just had to do your fucking jokes. You had to do your samurai bit. You just had to do your fucking jokes. That's what he did. It was like, and to that, never did anything. I was in a almost like depression from doing that for like, that was when you cross the a comedian no-no.
Mm-hmm.
When you do like.
Yeah, and you think you're never going to get booked anywhere again.
Right. When you're part of we become part of the club, and yet it's like that. I'm watching so much of The Sopranos. It's like when the two kids who are trying to come up the ranks, they mention to Tony in the bathroom, like, hey, you know, you want to get a cup? He's like, you stupid, you never fucking wiretaps. He's like, you don't do that. And like, there's things that you do when you're in the club,
right?
And you're when you're part of it,
that you big pussied it
that you don't do. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and I'm not, and nor have earned it. Even though Eddie Griffin shouldn't have been doing an hour, 2 hour, 3 hours, he shouldn't have ever been doing that.
Yeah,
he never should have been doing it. But well, let's use a better example. Like when whether Rogan or whoever it was is up there mm-hmm. doing an hour or whatever it is, from the Comedy Store and stuff, they have earned that spot. They have earned certain things that they've done, and they're not necessarily blowing it because they've established with the club that that's what they were going to be doing.
Especially, I mean, if you put your name on the marquee and you're the reason why everybody's
of course, 100%,
there, and you do a couple
extra minutes, yeah,
I can live with it.
Yes, like so when it was this room in Minnesota, it was like all of these comics. It was me, Tommy Savage, a bunch of other comedians, but there was this one, Daniel, I can't remember. What was his name?
Minnesota's a nice little hotbed of stand-up.
It was good. It was a good club. It was a really good club. And I just remember seeing it. Danny Hasami was the guy's name. He doesn't do comedy anymore, but like Danny Hasami was the guy's name. And Danny Hasami, I had been a regular at the Comedy Store now for maybe like a year, right?
Yeah.
And I've been... and. Going back to what you said, you speak just, and I was there every night, mm-hmm. performing there every night, and but nowhere else at that point. I wasn't doing room five, and so I was, and Tommy was the one. We did the treble run or whatever the hell, you know, and then like the full
all up through the Pacific Northwest,
everywhere.
If you like meth,
yeah, we went everywhere. We just drove everywhere, and we went to Colorado though. We went everywhere, and we're doing, and it was really. Crash course comedy stuff, because the majority, minus that show, I was very happy with all the stuff that I was doing. Mm-hmm. Like, because I was learning and I was trying new things and on the road, new crowds. Like it was very eye opening and new for me. No, I had a girlfriend, but no kids, and no consequences and that type of thing. Where it was just you wake up when you do. You wake up at 3 p.m, you do a set, you go sleep. But I remember being there, going, okay, well, Tommy's been doing this for a bit. Tommy had 8 or 10 minutes or something, mm-hmm. right? Danny Hasami, who had just started doing comedy, had like 6 or 7 minutes. I had 3.
Oh, and you felt shortchanged.
I felt shortchanged.
You had a chip on your shoulder.
I had a chip on my shoulder like an asshole at 24, 25 years old, whatever I was at the time. And I'm like, I can do a couple extra minutes. And then as I'm doing it, the crowd was losing it, and they were loving it. And I'm like, he's not going to mind. The guys, if I push in a little time, he sees that I'm doing really well. He's going to let me go.
Right. You think it's all about the art?
That's what I thought. And I learned quick. Lights flashing. And I was like, I think it was the last one, one of the last ones. Mm-hmm. Lights flashing violently now. And then mic goes off. And I'm like, oh. So like, okay, clearly he's going to get off. So I'm finishing my bit. And I went another 2 minutes, like Robin Williams in the main room with no microphone.
I would love to.
There's no way.
I would love to play that bit. Just like now on YouTube, and
I
just
be able to watch it.
And I know, but it's like
so
just because the memories of it, and just the way that it gestates in your brain for so long with an experience like that.
Yeah, it was. I would and mortified though for it because like Tommy really, as he should have, really let me have it.
As he should have. I would have done the same thing.
As he should have. Yeah. I was barred from. That was the only comedy club in my life. I never and for as long as you did comedy, because you knew me, you didn't know me then. For as long as you knew me, did you ever see me blow the light?
No.
Never.
No. You were trained.
I was trained.
You had like, the newspaper like hit you in the nose.
Like a dog that pissed in the living room.
If we have any fans up there, I would love to get back Acme. I just don't have a beat on it. I have another comedy club in Minneapolis that I have an offer from. Kind of love to go back to Acme.
You think I'm still banned there? The guy told me lifelong ban. I can't imagine it's the same. I can't imagine it's the same guy.
No, management at a comedy club.
There's no way they remember me.
No.
Well, that guy
and if they do, it'll be an even better story.
He escorted me out of the club. He waited for me to go.
We go up there. Yeah, I want you to go up. I want you to have a great set, and I'm cutting your mic off just for the goof.
You 100%
just for the goof.
Dude, he absolutely, this guy was hot. And I think he was a Filipino dude. And he was like just like out, like just walked me from and threw me out. I remember at the time thinking, because the crowd.
Well, yeah, it's like I'm a rebel. It's like I'm Sid Vicious.
I felt like a wrestler.
Yeah.
And that's when I was like, you know, into wrestling and the crowd's losing. I felt like Stone Cold Steve Austin. And then when Tommy quickly was like, I got us in here because of my name.
Yeah, right. Right.
So that doesn't just affect you, motherfucker.
Yeah.
That affects me.
I've had to have those conversations with people.
And I was like, you know, young, stupid kid going, what did I just do? And like, again, they both. Him and Danny was less breaking my chops about it as he was, like, at, but in, and like, and he continued to, even after he was not mad anymore, he continued to like rib me on it, as again, he should, but yeah. Like every other show after that, I might have finished a minute before I was supposed to go off the stage.
The thing that people don't realize is like, yeah, it's like this cool rock and roll moment, you know, because like you grow up and you're like, if it's too loud, you're too old. Right. And then you have a house or an apartment and you have loud neighbors and you're like, oh, it is too loud. I don't know if I'm too old, but it is too loud and you need to do something about this. It's like the conundrum that every comedian faces with Andy Kaufman.
Yeah.
Because we all want to look up to Andy Kaufman as this comic genius, which he was, as this legend.
Yeah.
But it's also, this guy's going on stage, and he's running the light, and he's playing bongos, and he's reading books, and he's walking half the room, and I got to go up next.
Right.
Like, at some point, the cast of Taxi, I'm sure it's like you look back on it, and you're like, oh, what a genius he was. But when you're there for those long days on set.
Why do you think everyone wanted to fight him?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
That's why he started wrestling everybody.
That's why, because that was his brand of humor, which was so crazy about him. But, like, yeah, it was not a lot of people liked Andy Kaufman.
I was thinking of him on the way over here, because I heard that that R.E.M. song, Man on the Moon. Oh, it's such a good song.
It's so
such
good.
A good song. Great movie.
But, yeah, so all of that, I just remember, like, that was just yeah, that was a crash course.
Yeah.
That was a crash course. And it was like, it was definitely one of the more, I mean, but like I said,
you're still stinging from it.
That's not me.
Don't worry, that's honey. When you go back on stage, I'll make sure you see the light.
But I'll get the
little hook.
It helped, dude. It helped though, because I never blew the light at the Comedy Store and I was already regular there. Mm-hmm. Never blew it. I saw the light come from at the sign. I was off when I was supposed to be off because I didn't want to. You know, shit where I eat.
It's like Black Widow. The training kicks in. Even if you haven't done it in a minute, you know when you're on a stage and you see a light, you're like, oh, okay, that's my cue.
Yeah, but I was aware that I earned it, that I hadn't earned it there. You know, I was aware that, and I think the cockiness of a stupid kid in at that time going, well, I should have gotten more time. Like, I earned my stripes at the Comedy Store. You should at least give me five, right? And quickly, newspaper. Newspaper.
No, you just combined it.
Yeah, newspaper. It was. I got a newspaper.
Hey, look, and I should have. All flying with wax wings, and occasionally we're going to get too close to the sun, and we're going to fall to earth, and we just put on the next set of wax wings, and we hope we don't make them as hot.
It's 100%. And I'll tell you though, man, like I never did that ever again after that, and for the rest of the trip, like learned a lot from that trip.
Sat in the trunk the rest of the trip.
I don't think I said a word for the rest of the
night. They just drive you to Canada and they're like, all right, good luck getting back.
I didn't say, we went out to eat that night somewhere and I remember just sitting, like, I've seen the same look from my daughter, like, after we have, like, told her, like, she said the wrong thing to my wife and you just sit there.
Yeah.
Sit there
in your own filth.
I just sat there and it was like that guilty thing of like, here, eat your food. No, I don't deserve to eat.
I'm going to be banned on chucklemonkey.com. Right. This is nothing's ever going to work out for me.
No, you got to respect the badge. I didn't respect the badge that night. And meaning,
good way to put it.
You know what I mean? Like the fact is, I don't give a shit if that audience loved what I was doing.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. The dude who books it, who's going to determine whether or not more crowds love what I'm doing. That was one crowd of, let's say, I think it was like 400 people, and there was a lot of people in that room. Like, however big it was. It was massive. It was packed. It was packed. However many people that room sat, it was maxed out. So if it was 200, it was 200. If it was 400, it was 400. I remember it being big. And that there would have been more crowds that I could have potentially done and come back to had I not. So don't do that ever if you're a comedian.
Yeah. For more of the Christian Harloff comedy class, make sure you order his book, The Comedy Bible.
Judy, what's her?
$29.99. Judy Carter.
God.
All right. Look, I took her class.
You did, I know.
Sebastian took her class.
I know.
What more do you need?
You said why? You want me
to do the same material.
To do it again.
For the same audience.
The same, and not
the
more.
The class?
What class?
I gotta meet one of you?
I don't
for
like.
For coffee?
Here's not one of you, even you, Judy, gonna be at a Scorsese film.
Thanks. He is in The Irishman.
That guy is in every Academy. You put him in a movie,
you're guaranteed a nomination.
It's going to get nominated. Yeah. Green Book.
Yeah.
What's he doing? He's doing something else coming up soon, doesn't he?
Probably something good, yeah.
Fucker. He's the best.
Talent.
All right, look. This was fun.
Talent and not running the light.
No.
Gets you far in.
We ran the light today, but I like that we ran the light.
You ran the light on that story a little bit.
Yeah, I know. I know. But it was, I haven't lived it. I haven't lived it in so long. All right. Thank you guys so much. Thank you to Mark Ellis. Make sure. Thank you to our friends over at Captain Morgan. You guys are the best. We appreciate you. We'll see you very soon. Make sure you subscribe to this podcast feed. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. Leave a comment on this channel, but make sure you subscribe and, do the whole thing. Download the episodes. Helps tremendously. Thank you, guys.
Peace.